Chapter 19. 12:26 hours. Porter killed the call. He flipped down the antenna and handed the sat phone back to Tannen. As she reached for it, a bottle of pills fell out of her jacket pocket and rolled across the ground, stopping next to Porter's boot. One of the bottles he'd seen up in her hotel room. Tannen hurriedly scooped up the amber plastic bottle and shoved it back inside her jacket, ignoring Porter's quizzical stare.
"If you're going to lecture me about the evils of prescription medicine, now really isn't the best time," she said.
A shout went up from the other side of the parapet, as Bald called out from his observation point overlooking the roundabout. Porter left Tannen with a sat phone and worked his way back across the rooftop, dropping down at the northern parapet. Bald was peering out through the binoculars at the Cape Road to the east.
"What is it, Mucker?"
Porter said. He could see a couple of dust trails in the distance, nothing more.
"Take a look."
Bald slid back from the wall and offered his binos to Porter.
"More supply trucks, 700 meters away, north of the petrol station."
Porter took the binos and concentrated his gaze at the point Bald had indicated. 100 meters east of the roundabout, he sighted a disused petrol station at the side of the road, its bare forecourt covered with weeds and broken glass. Porter shifted his line of sight to the road. Then he saw the pickups. There were four of them, bowling west down the road at a decent speed towards the roundabout, with a gap of 4 meters between one truck and the next. Each truck was loaded with stacks of ammo crates, Porter observed. At 700 meters, the trucks were too far away for a clean shot with the SLRs. The palm trees on both sides of the road partially obscured the targets, stopping Bald from giving them a blast from the GPMG. The four pickups hit the roundabout, swung north, and disappeared around the back of the police station, 600 meters northeast of the hotel. The supply vehicles were swiftly followed by a pair of old Toyota minibuses. Both were crammed full of rebels, like tube carriages at rush hour. There had to be at least 30 fighters in each bus, Porter figured. They followed the same route as the wagons, tooling north past the roundabout, then turning left off the road. It pulled up out of sight, somewhere behind the police station. Tully took in a sharp intake of breath.
"Jesus, there must be 100 of the fuckers down there now."
"They're gearing up for something big," Porter said.
"Looks like you are right, mate," said Bald. "The Shogis have got someone in charge down there who knows what they're doing."
He spat on the ground.
"Those Yanks better hurry the fuck up, otherwise we're shafted."
The mood on the rooftop changed. There was a quiet tension in the air now, which was understandable. When the first wave of rebels had poured forward, Porter had been reasonably confident in their ability to keep the enemy at bay. But now the odds had shifted. He shoved aside the unease brewing in his guts, turned towards Tully, and pointed to the spot where the rebels were massing.
"We need eyes on the main street. Two of you watch that fucking spot. Get the other Belgian lads to cover all sides of the hotel in case the bastards try to flank us. If there's movement to the left or right of the gathering point, we need to know about it."
"Roger that,"
Tully said. Then he moved off with Nihlis to brief the other Belgians and set them up at each side of the rooftop. Porter drew back from the parapet and passed the binoculars to Bald.
"Keep eyes on the rebels. Watch for approaching vehicles. We need to know how many more of those bastards are forming up over there."
Bald nodded.
"Where are you going?"
"To see if we can get someone to pull a few strings with the Americans."
He pushed away from the parapet, moving past Nihlis and the four other Belgians. He stopped briefly beside Solomon. The Man Mountain had finished linking together the rounds of the 7.62mm brass through the two ammo belts. Porter nodded his approval at Solomon's efforts and sent him back downstairs. Then he made his way over to Tannen. She was crouching beside the ventilator, craning her neck at the parapet. Her eyes quickly snapped to Porter as he approached. He could see the nervous strain written across her face.
"What's happening down there?"
she asked.
"The rebels are forming up over at the police station. More than 100 of them. Looks like they're getting ready to have another pop at us."
The colour drained from Tannen's face.
"How long can you hold them off?"
"I don't know," he replied honestly. "We're talking about a large force with heavy ordnance, and we're down to the bare bones."
Tannen took a deep breath and nodded.
"What do you need me to do?"
"Your mate's with Angela, right?"
Sure. We go way back. Angela and I joined the Foreign Office at the same time.
Get on the phone to her. Tell her we need whatever hardware the Yanks have got, and we need it right this fucking instant. Gunships, fast air, anything that can buy us some time until the evacuation team arrives.
You're asking me to bypass my boss?
We've got no choice. We've tried our handler, but he's messing us about. We need someone who can cut through the noise, make the Yanks understand there are lives at stake here.
Tannen looked uncertain.
I'll see what I can do. Angela knows some people over at Langley. She might be able to put a word in and get something done.
Porter said,
Whatever strings you can pull with Angela, get them pulled. Tell her if we don't get some gunships on our position very soon, there won't be any guests left to evacuate.
A brief flicker of alarm flashed in Tannen's eyes.
What'll happen if the rebels break through?
Porter grabbed one of the Makarovs that Crowder and Bald had brought up to the roof. He pressed down on the heel release on the underside of the grip, slid out the mag, and inspected the cutout. There was a single round in the clip. He gently reinserted the clip, racked the slide back to chamber the round, then thumbed up the safety to the on position and offered the weapon to Tannen, grip first. She stared at it like it was a live grenade.
What's that for?
Her voice had gone cold and flat and quiet.
There's one round in the chamber, Porter said, tapping the side of the Makarov. If the worst happens and the rebels take the hotel, you point the barrel at the roof of your mouth and pull the trigger.
Tannen recoiled in shock.
You're serious?
Porter stared at her.
Deadly.
She shook her head frantically.
There must be some other way out.
There isn't. This is your best bet. The rebels aren't going to go easy on the guests. If they overrun us, you're better off with a quick bullet to the head than letting those lunatics take you alive.
Why? What would they do to me?
You don't want to know.
For the next 40 minutes, a continual flow of rebels streamed forward from the roundabout and amassed at the police station. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, another 50 rebels had reached the forming up point. Every so often, another supply truck skidded to a halt round the side of the station building to distribute more rockets and ammo to the assembled rebels. Bald and Porter took turns to OP the enemy through the binoculars, while Tully and the 5 Belgians prowled the other 3 sides of the rooftop, watching for any sign of enemy movement on the flanks. But the rebels were pooling all their efforts into reinforcing their position at the old police station. It was obvious to Porter they were planning to hit the defenders soon with a major frontal assault.
Whoever's calling the shots down there has changed tactics, he thought. They're not going to attack us in small groups like before. They're playing a different game now, putting their resources together for a coordinated attack. The next time they hit us, we won't stand a chance.
Bald said,
Any word on those gunships?
Porter looked over at Tannen, shrugged a question at her. She looked up from the sat phone, met his gaze, and shook her head in frustration.
Nothing yet,
Porter said, turning back to face the parapet.
Fuck's sake! Bald shook his head bitterly. What's taking them so long? If the Yanks don't come up with the goods soon, we won't stand a chance against these scum.
Porter said nothing. He checked his G-Shock again. 1309. 43 minutes since he had put in the call to Hawkridge. Down at the police station, the number of rebels arriving at the gathering point had slowed to a trickle. Porter figured at least 150 X-rays were now encamped behind the station building. A dead, hot stillness hung in the air. He could feel the nape of his neck burning under the sun's intense rays. Everything was hot to touch, the concrete wall, the plastic water bottles, the trigger guard on the SLR. It had been more than 6 hours since the first assault on the hotel, and the action had started to take its toll on Porter. He felt physically shattered and mentally drained. His muscles were aching and weary. The rifle felt twice as heavy in his grip now. He knew the guys on the roof wouldn't be able to keep up the defense of the hotel for long once the enemy attacked. Every so often, he called out to Tannen, asking her for updates. But she had still heard nothing from her bosses or Angela. A bleak thought slowly began to pick away at the base of Porter's skull.
The cavalry's not going to get here in time.
The minutes ticked by. Another 9 rebels scurried forward to the forming up point. A battered old Nissan pulled up, carrying 5 more fighters. Then everything went quiet. No more enemies advanced from the direction of the roundabout. No more supply trucks arrived. Porter could hear nothing except the palm tree fronds shivering in the breeze, the thump of his heart beating erratically in his chest. Bald's voice broke the silence.
They're on the move. 50 X-rays heading west towards the plantation.
Porter forced his tired body into action once more. He grabbed his rifle and crawled over to the north side of the parapet, centering the SLR sights on the banana trees 400 meters away at his 2 o'clock. Dozens of shapes were sneaking forward from around the back of the police station now. They were approaching the banana plantation 100 meters to the west of the forming up point. At least 20 of the rebels were lugging RPGs, Porter observed. The remainder were equipped with assault rifles, and he spotted a few mortars in there as well.
It's starting again, he thought, as he watched the enemy advance. They're going to attack, and this time they're going to hit us with everything they've got. Get into position, he roared at the other defenders, waving them over. Fucking move yourselves!
Tully and 4 of the Belgians scrabbled over, taking up firing positions either side of Porter along the north-facing wall. Neelis formed up to his left, with Bald, Tully, and 2 of the Belgians at his right. The other 2 shooters were left guarding the eastern side of the rooftop, watching for any enemies who might try to break off from the main group and outflank them. Bald set down the binos and inserted the last remaining belt of 762mm brass into the left-hand side of the feed tray on the GPMG. He ratcheted the cocking handle, stared down the sights as another dozen rebels poured west from the back of the station building, joining their mates behind the tree line.
"Here they come, guys," Neelis said. "Let's fucking do this."
He gave Bald the thumbs up, then went back to peering down the sights of his rifle. The Belgian didn't look too worried, thought Porter.
He sounds almost cheerful.
Porter cupped a hand to his mouth and shouted over at Tannen,
"Anything?"
"I'm on hold. Someone's trying to find Angela."
"Whoever it is, tell them to fucking hurry up and pull their finger out. We're about to get hit here."
He flicked the safety on the side of his weapon to semi-automatic, tensing his muscles as he trained his weapon on the banana plantation, ready to fire as soon as the first target popped into view. The rebels had clearly absorbed the lessons of the earlier attacks and stayed behind cover. Porter could see a few brightly coloured shapes flitting into view between the palm trees, their clothes visible amid the dense shade. He held fire, painfully aware of how little ammo they had. Then he saw a glimmer of movement at the left of his fire picture. He swung his sights across just in time to see a rocket fizzing out from the edge of the tree line. Then another.
"Incoming!"
he yelled. The rockets struck the front of the hotel in a furious torrent. The first RPG round hit low, slamming into one of the upper floors with a juddering boom, pulverizing glass and concrete. 2 more rockets whizzed over the top of the parapet, missing the defenders by less than a meter. Everyone involuntarily ducked as 3 more RPGs burred overhead in a fury of noise and heat. One of the rockets slammed into the concrete base below the water tower in the middle of the rooftop, spewing out bright orange flames, the shock of the impact blowing off the tower's corrugated steel roof. Acrid black smoke gushed across the rooftop, blocking out the sunlight and showering Porter with debris. He rubbed the dust out of his eyes, ignored the burning in his lungs, and swung the SLR's iron sights across to the left of the plantation, following the smoke trail. 4 X-rays with RPG-7s were visible in the hollow ground next to the banana trees. They were taking turns to fire rockets at the hotel, darting back into cover behind the trees to reload. Porter centered his sights on one guy in a kneeling firing stance, shouldering his RPG as he shaped to fire. He calmly centered the foresight on the man's chest and fired twice. Both rounds hit their target, knocking the rebel off his feet, like he'd been hit by a 2-ton truck. Bald raked down 2 of the other guys with a burst from the jimpy. But a seemingly endless stream of rebels kept pouring forward from the trees to fire their rockets. Porter arced his sights across the tree line and fired again, clobbering another rebel dressed in a Hawaiian shirt and flip-flops. His mate disappeared behind the trees before Porter could cut him down. Around him, the other defenders on the roof were all concentrating their fire on the plantation, but the rebels still managed to unleash a few rockets. As Porter searched for his next target, he saw another rebel creep into view at the edge of his vision, a guy in an army uniform, one of the soldiers who had defected to the rebels. He carried an RPG launcher, and he moved like he knew how to handle the weapon properly. The rebel soldier took up a position in the hollow ground next to the plantation. He pointed his launcher at the rooftop and fired before Porter could take aim at him. The RPG whirred towards the parapet, directly towards the spot Bald was occupying. Bald had moved up into a kneeling position to drop a trio of rebels with a couple of bursts from his jimpy, and his attention was drawn away from the soldier with the rocket launcher. He didn't see the round heading towards him. But Tully did. The guy was 4 meters to the right of Bald when he sighted the soldier lining up his RPG-7. There was no time to shout a warning. Tully shot to his feet and threw himself at Bald a split second before the rocket struck the parapet. The two men barrel-rolled across the ground as the RPG slammed into the lower section of the wall where Bald had been kneeling a moment earlier. The explosion shook the rooftop, blasting away chunks of the concrete and exposing the steel rebar. Smoke gushed over the rooftop. Bald and Tully landed on the ground next to Porter, bits of incinerated rubble raining down on them. Neelis staggered back from the parapet, hacking and coughing. Porter tasted grit in his mouth, felt the debris nicking at his hands and face. The smoke fizzled out. Bald scraped himself off the ground, his clothes coated in dust. He glanced in shock at the huge hole in the wall where the rocket had struck.
"Fuck, that was close,"
he nodded at Tully.
"Thanks. Thank me later, fella. We've got to survive this clusterfuck first."
Porter looked over at the two Belgians who had been to the right of Tully. One of the guys had been knocked back by the blast. He lay in a dazed heap next to the air conditioning duct, his face covered in cuts and his clothing torn in several places. The other Belgian was slumped on the ground next to the wall. Half his face had been blown off. There was a soup of bone and gristle and sinew where his eyes and mouth and nose used to be. The other half of his face was blistered and blackened, like overcooked meat left on a barbecue. The other Belgian stared at his dead mate uncomprehendingly.
"Get up!" Porter roared at the man. "Get back on that fucking wall!"
The Belgian snapped out of his trance. He scooped up his SLR and moved back over to the parapet, stepping around the guy with half his face missing. The RPG rounds were coming in thick and fast now as the rebels swarmed closer to the hotel, breaking across the open ground and rushing towards the garage. Somewhere behind the plantation, the enemy had set up a mortar. Porter heard the shrill whistling sound of grenades arcing through the sky, like someone letting off a ton of fireworks simultaneously. The mortar rounds landed well short of the rooftop, slamming into the access road immediately to the north of the hotel, belching smoke and flames several meters into the air. More grenades launched through the air and landed to the rear of the hotel, some 30 meters behind the men on the rooftop. The temperature on the rooftop went from boiling hot to furnace.
"There's too many of them,"
Bald shouted above the crack of rifle rounds being discharged and the whoosh of rockets fizzing out from between the trees.
"Keep them on the move," Porter said. "Don't give the fuckers a chance to settle."
The two blades fired well-placed bursts at a group of rebels swarming towards the garage and the derelict buildings to the west, but it wasn't enough. For every one X-ray they cut down, 2 more targets made it to cover at the slums. The rebels were now 200 meters from the hotel, edging closer with every passing minute. Those rebels based at the plantation kept up their vicious rate of gunfire, mortar rounds and RPGs.
"We can't hold them off for much longer," thought Porter.
50 minutes had passed since he'd put in the call to Hawkridge. There was still no sign of any top cover coming in. He shifted his focus back to the plantation. 2 figures were kneeling beside a mortar unit. They were visible in the shaded ground between a couple of trees. One guy was securing the base plate, while his mate fetched another round from a wooden crate to slide into the tube. Porter depressed the trigger and gave the guy with the mortar grenade the good news. His mate had just enough time to look up and see the other guy's brains spurting out the back of his skull. Then Porter lined up the second target with the sighting post and sent him over to the dark side with a 2-round burst. Another mortar team rushed forward to set up shop at the plantation. Porter was about to line them up when he heard a deep, low rumble in the distance.
"Technicals!" Tully screamed. "Incoming! 2 of them!"
Porter swiveled his gaze to the roundabout. A pair of Toyota pickups were bombing down the Cape Road at a decent clip, tearing towards the hotel. Both trucks were carrying heavy machine guns mounted on tripods on the back platforms. One of the weapons was a 12.7mm, identical to the one Bald had neutralized during the earlier assault on the hotel. The second machine gun was even bigger. Porter identified it as a 14.5mm ZPU Russian anti-aircraft gun, the double-barreled variant, a serious piece of hardware. The 12.7mm looked almost puny by comparison.
"If the rebels get that ZPU on target, we're done for,"
he shouted at the others to get down. In the next instant, the 14.5mm let rip. Porter threw himself to the ground as a series of deep, loud booms echoed across the road. 4 massive rounds sliced through the thinner upper section of the parapet, half a meter to the left of Porter. The top of the wall disintegrated. It was there one moment, and then suddenly it wasn't.
"This fucker's mine," Bald said.
He shuffled over to the nearest drainage hole as another furious volley of 14.5mm rounds pounded against the air conditioning duct. The technical had dropped its speed dramatically to allow the rebel manning the 14.5mm to properly aim the weapon at the rooftop. Bald rolled onto his stomach, shoved the jimpy muzzle through the opening, and aimed at the moving target. The 14.5mm sparked up again, punching fist-sized holes in the concrete and keeping the men on the rooftop pinned down behind the thicker, lower section of the parapet. Through another drainage hole, Porter could see scores of rebels taking advantage of the savage bursts from the ZPU, darting out of cover from behind the plantation tree line and dashing over to the garage 200 meters from the hotel. Bald pulled the trigger before the technical could fire again. Porter watched through the drain hole as his mucker pasted the rebel operating the ZPU with a long, rattling burst from the GPMG. Bullets shredded the pickup, nailing the 2 rebels in the front cab. Bald smoothly lined up the pickup, equipped with a 12.7mm, and peppered that vehicle with rounds too. The second vehicle rolled to a halt in the middle of the road. 2 guys tried to climb on the back of the truck and mount the 12.7mm. Both were swiftly cut down by a couple of bursts from the jimpy. The relief was temporary. Porter and Bald switched their attention back to the plantation, brassing up rebels with short bursts as soon as they popped out of cover. To his left, Tully and Nealis were concentrating their efforts on the rebels at the abandoned garage. Some of the enemy had set up a firing point on the first floor of the garage, and a steady flow of RPGs whooshed towards the hotel, striking the lower floors a few meters below the rooftop. Several more X-rays had taken up positions at the adjacent windows, spraying the parapet with continuous bursts from their AK-47s. Despite the best efforts of the men on the roof, the rebels continued their relentless advance, gradually closing the distance to the hotel. Around 30 X-rays had taken up firing positions at the garage, with 40 based at the plantation, and more pushing forward all the time.
"We can't hold out much longer."
A group of 4 rebels broke across the open ground to the garage. Porter clipped one of them in the back with the last round in the magazine. He ejected the empty mag, dug a fresh clip out of his back pocket, and reloaded.
"Down to my last 20 rounds," he realized grimly.
He looked over to his right and saw Bald had worked his way through more than half the belt of 7.62mm. The guy had fewer than 90 bullets left on the belt.
"Shit!"
one of the Belgians on the eastern parapet called out in a frantic tone of voice.
"They're flanking us!"
Porter and Bald broke into a crouching run and hurried over to the Belgians. They were ducking low beside the wall as rounds buzzed overhead in vicious little bursts, sounding like a hive of yellow jackets right after someone had trashed their nest. Porter looked through the nearest drainage hole. He could see scores of rebels jumping down from half a dozen pickup trucks that had pulled up next to the athletics track, 300 metres to the east. 40 of them. A 12.7mm machine gun, mounted on the back of a Nissan pickup, spat round after round at the parapet, providing covering fire for the rebels as they debussed. Porter and Bald started putting rounds down through the openings, picking off the closest targets. The pickup responded with a hailstorm of gunfire from the 12.7mm, forcing the two blades to bunker down. Bullets pinged off the duct behind Porter, ricocheting off the water tower. Others smashed apart the upper wall. Porter tried to return fire through the drain hole, but there were too many rounds coming in, and as he looked down, he noticed a cluster of rebels had broken forward, 15 of them. They were racing south towards the low wall that enclosed the rear of the hotel, closing in. "I'm almost out, lads," Tully called out from the northern wall. Tully shrunk back from the parapet as another RPG round whizzed low and struck the top floor immediately below the rooftop, throwing up a cloud of smoke and shattered glass. "Fuck," Porter said. "There's too many of them." "If we had bayonets," Bald said, "we'd be fixing them right about now." The two operators shared a look. Porter half smiled at his mucker. They both knew what the other was thinking. "It's curtains for us now. There's no way out, not this time." "Anyone else in our position would be bricking it," thought Porter. "But that's not who we are. I'm not scared of the rebels. I'm not afraid of bloody dying. I'm not even angry at dying for nothing in a shithole country I don't give a flying fuck about, protecting some twat of an ex-Rupert. I just wish I'd had the chance to see Sandy's face one more time, to say goodbye to my daughter. Tell her that our old man's sorry for fucking everything up." There was a lull in the rounds chipping away at the wall. Porter crawled back over to the drain hole and hefted up his SLR, ready to put down the enemy with his last 12 rounds. He was about to pull the trigger when he heard Tannen's voice calling out to him above the rumble of gunfire and the hideous, pained screams of the dying. He shrank back from the drain hole and hurried over to the ventilator. Tannen handed him the sat phone.
"It's Angela," she said breathlessly. "I've got her on the line. She wants to speak with you."
For a moment, Porter couldn't believe what he was hearing. He snatched the phone and pressed it to his ear, plugging his other ear with his thumb to block out the noise.
"Angela?"
The voice on the other end of the line said,
"Dominique tells me you're in a bit of a tight spot."
Porter almost laughed.
"That's putting it fucking mildly. The rebels have got the hotel surrounded. We're about to be overrun here. We need some help."
March said,
"That's why I'm calling. Look, I've been discussing your situation with the American Secretary of State. It wasn't easy, but she's agreed to intervene personally. We've got air support coming in as we speak. 2 gunships."
"About fucking time. What's their ETA?"
Rounds buzzed over the wall and pinged against the side of the water tower, pinballing across the rooftop. March said,
"I don't have the details. The USS Lauderdale will be calling you any minute now to confirm. Keep this line clear, okay?"
She hung up before Porter could get another word in. He didn't feel any immediate sense of relief. The situation on the ground was still critical, he knew.
"The rebels are closing in on all sides and we've got fuck-all ammo. We're not out of the woods yet."
30 seconds later, the sat phone beeped again. Porter answered, heard nothing but static.
"Hello? Anyone there?"
There was a long pause, then the static faded. A stern, humorless voice came over the line.
"Sir, this is Colonel Joshua Hendricks,"
the voice said in a strong Texan accent, the kind that made every word sound like the twang of a guitar string.
"I'm the commander of the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit, here on the Operations Bridge at the USS Lauderdale. Am I speaking with John Porter?"
Yanks, Porter thought.
Never say one word when 10 will do. "That's me."
"Sir, I'm authorized to report that we have 2 Blackhawks inbound to your position. ETA is 9 minutes, I repeat. 2 Blackhawks inbound, ETA 9 minutes. What is your present situation?"
"Not fucking good. We've got about 150 X-rays here, plus 2 technicals with 12.7mm machine guns approximately 150 metres from our position. We've had at least 40 RPGs fired on us, and the enemy has got a mortar set up somewhere too."
Sounds like y'all are in more trouble than you can shake a stick at.
Put it this way, mate. Now I know how General Custer felt.
The Texan didn't laugh. Officers in the Yank military didn't have a sense of humour, in Porter's experience. Must be something in the water over there.
Well, sir, our boys are fixing to level things up some. Think you can hold them off till our guys get there?
We've halted their advance for the moment. Should be able to keep them off for a few more minutes.
Good to hear it, sir. We'll check in once our guys have a visual on your position.
Roger that.
The call ended. 9 minutes, Porter thought.
It's going to be close. But at least we've got a fighting chance now.
He looked across at the rooftop, then up at the cloudless sky, then over at the smoke billowing up from the exploded mortar shells north and south of the hotel. A thought occurred to him just then. He waved Tully over, leaving Nihlis and Spraytan to deal with the rebels on the northern side of the hotel. Tully got down on his hands and knees and inched his way over, hugging the ground as bullets cut through the air above, ripping into the wall and showering him with fragmented concrete.
"I need you and Jock to run downstairs,"
Porter said once Tully had reached him.
"Get to the underground car park, grab a car tire and one of the jerry cans from the back of the Range Rover. Take a knife from the kitchen, too. Bring everything up to the roof. Make it quick."
"What the fuck for?"
Porter pointed to the sky.
"We've got top cover coming in 9 minutes from now. We need to mark our position to the pilots so they know we're friendlies. We don't want to find ourselves on the end of a fucking blue-on-blue."
Tully nodded, sensing the urgency of the situation. He turned and broke into a crouching run with Bald at his side. The two men edged around the air conditioning duct, moving as fast as they could under the intense weight of fire bearing down on the rooftop. Once they had departed, Porter moved over to Tannen. He nodded at her, pointed to the stairwell.
"You need to get off the rooftop. We've got Blackhawks coming in less than 10 minutes from now. They're going to be blasting everything that moves. You'll be safer downstairs."
"What about you?"
"We've got to stay up here to direct the fire. Get down to the upper floors and find somewhere to keep your head down. It's going to get noisy as fuck up here."
Tannen got up and left. Porter watched her disappear into the stairwell, then returned to his position at the drain hole to operate the jimpy, putting down a 3-round burst on the pavilion. Another 10 rebels sprinted out from behind the structure and darted south, hooking around to the wall perimetering the rear of the hotel. They were gone before Porter could cut them down. He crawled over to the south-facing parapet, his knees scraping over the chunks of concrete and spent rounds littering the ground. Then he poked the jimpy muzzle through an opening and sprayed a short burst at 6 rebels, scaling over the low wall. He killed 3 of them. The survivors sought cover behind the sheds at the far end of the grounds, 100 meters back from the hotel.
50 rounds left in the belt.
For the next 5 minutes, Porter madly scrambled from one side of the rooftop to the other, desperately trying to keep the rebels at bay with short, controlled bursts from the GPMG. But the enemy was growing bolder all the time. He kept glancing at the horizon, straining his ears as he listened for the telltale sound of the rotor blades that would signal the arrival of the Blackhawks. He checked his watch. 6 minutes since he'd got off the sat phone with Colonel Hendricks. 3 minutes till the choppers arrived, if everything went according to plan. 60 seconds later, Bald and Tully charged out of the stairwell, carting a black rubber tire with worn treads and a dented alloy rim. They dumped the tire beside the bullet-riddled water tower. Then Bald ducked back inside the stairwell. He returned a few beats later, clutching a jerry can in his left hand and a huge kitchen knife in his right. Bald took the knife and slashed open the tire as if he was gutting a fish. Air hissed violently out of the gash in the rubber. Then he took the jerry can, unscrewed the cap, and poured the fuel inside the tire, filling it up. He emptied the dregs of the can over the top of the tire, chucked it aside, and dug a box of matches out of his back pocket, struck one against the side of the box, tossed it onto the tire, stood well back. The tire burst into flames. The fire quickly consumed the wheel, filling the air with the pungent stench of burning rubber, and channeling coal-black smoke into the sky. Porter could feel the heat from the fumes scalding his back as he moved over to the eastern parapet. The temperature on the rooftop was unbearable now, suffocating, like wearing a wetsuit inside a sauna. Every time Porter breathed, it felt as if someone was taking a blowtorch to his lungs. After 8 minutes, he heard an incessant thump-thump noise at his 9 o'clock. coming from the north of the hotel. The noise grew louder by the second, until the whole building seemed to reverberate with the beat. Porter looked beyond the north parapet, shading his eyes against the savage sun. 3/4 of a mile out, a helicopter swung into view above the bay and surged towards the hotel. Even at this range, Porter easily recognized it as a Black Hawk, with its long, waspish design and bulbous cockpit, rotor blades slicing and dicing the air like a couple of giant blenders. A pair of General Electric M134 miniguns were mounted on fixed metal brackets, protruding from the doors on either side of the main fuselage behind the cockpit. 6-barreled monsters, capable of firing up to 6,000 rounds per minute. Porter felt his spirit soar as he watched the Black Hawk sweeping inland.
Finally, we're in business.
The sat phone sparked into life. Porter grabbed it, hit answer.
Hendricks?
Our boys are 1 minute out,
Colonel Hendricks drawled.
Can you confirm your coordinates?
Porter replied in a slow, clear voice, so there was no misunderstanding.
Our position is the black smoke on the rooftop of the Ambassador's Hotel. Repeat, we are directly under the black smoke rising from the hotel rooftop.
1 moment,
Hendricks said. There was a pause while the ops officers checked in with the pilots. Then the colonel came back on the line.
Confirmed. We have a visual on the black smoke. Repeat, our guys have a visual on your location.
Porter said, the area surrounding the hotel is not deemed friendly. Neutralize anything 360 of this building. I say again, anything surrounding the black smoke is hostile territory. There was another pause. Then Hendricks said,
understood, sir. We're going to patch you through to the pilots now. Communicate directly with them from now on. We'll be listening in from the bridge.
Hendricks' voice disappeared. Porter heard a series of whirs and clicks. He chucked the binoculars at Bald and gestured for him to begin identifying targets east of the parapet. The throb of the Black Hawk's blades was deafening now as it came in fast towards the hotel. On 8.5 minutes, the connection went through. A voice cut through the static.
Ambassador One, this is Hilo Z1. We are inbound to your position and ready to engage. Hilo Z2 is 2 minutes out.
Porter said, Hilo Z1, this is Ambassador One. We have enemy forces in technical, 300 meters east of our location. Engage, engage. Porter craned his neck up and tracked the Black Hawk as it banked heavily to the left and circled the hotel in a wide arc. Then the heli swung around and came tearing down towards the athletics track on the east side of the rooftop, the humming noise of the blades drowning out every other sound on the rooftop, sunlight reflecting off the cockpit. The Black Hawk swooped down on its target. At this distance, Porter could see the loadies manning the M134s behind the cockpit. They were tied to lanyards to stop them from falling out. He looked away and shouted at the other guys on the rooftop, cupping a hand to his mouth.
Incoming friendly fire! Everyone get the fuck down now!
Tully, Nealis, and the other Belgians hit the deck. The Black Hawk bore down on the technical station next to the pavilion. Most of the rebels blindly stood their ground, continuing to fire at the rooftop. Others pointed their AK-47s at the Black Hawk and emptied pointless bursts at the heli. They were either really bold or really fucking stupid. On 9 minutes, the Black Hawk opened fire. One of the miniguns screamed. It sounded like the world's biggest chainsaw carving through the world's biggest tree. Porter thought his eardrums might explode from the noise. He saw the minigun barrel light up, saw the rounds smashing into the technical in a red-hot stream. The burst lasted 5 seconds, which equaled approximately 500 rounds of hot lead concentrated in an area the size of a bathtub. A deadly cocktail of heat, pressure, and brass. Nothing could survive that. The technical was vaporized in front of Porter's eyes. There was a patch of blackened land and smoke and flames where the vehicle had been, and not much else. The rebels camped around the pavilion instantly turned and ran for the roundabout. The minigun chainsawed again. The fleeing targets weren't cut down, they were simply turned to dust. The gun stopped whirring. The Black Hawk flew back out towards the bay. The pilot came back over the sat phone and said,
Ambassador 1, this is Hilo Z1. On target. Repeat, on target. Hilo Z2, incoming.
Roger that, Porter said. A second thumping sound boomeranged across the sky. Porter looked up, squinted, saw the second Black Hawk slingshotting in from the bay. The second heli flew past its twin and closed in on the hotel. Everything was happening very quickly now, like a game of chess being played at 100 miles an hour. Bald had already scuttled across to the south side of the rooftop, scoping out the next targets. Porter noticed something in the corner of his eye. Smoke spooling into the sky from the wreckage of the technical to the east. Black smoke. Close to the plumes rising up from the car tire, close enough for the two plumes to be mistaken for one another. Porter spoke into the sat phone. The second Black Hawk was already banking towards the hotel, circling it in the same broad arc as the first heli.
Hilo Z2, this is Ambassador 1. Be aware, vehicle is on fire. We have smoke coming off vehicle to the east, 300 meters. Be advised, we are still on the rooftop. Repeat, the black smoke to the east is not our position.
The line squawked with interference. Then the pilot said,
Read you loud and clear, buddy. Smoke to the east is not you guys. Hilo Z2, ready to engage next targets when you are.
Bald said, 10 X-rays south of us, mate. 100 meters away at the sheds.
Porter got back on the blower.
Go south. Go south. 100 meters south of black smoke. 10 enemies with weapons. Engage, engage.
The second Black Hawk banked steeply off to its left. Porter watched it perform a low flyover south of the hotel. The minigun roared. The rebels seeking cover at the sheds were turned to mincemeat. Spent rounds poured out of the tubes attached to the side of the minigun and rained down on the swimming pool behind the hotel, like coins out of a fruit machine hitting the jackpot. Half a dozen rebels legged it back towards the low wall in a desperate bid to escape the fire. The Black Hawk tore them to pieces and took out most of the wall, too. The targets had literally been scrubbed out of existence. Over at the bay, the first heli had completed its turn and now swooped inland again for a second flyover. Tully called out from the north side of the rooftop, where he'd returned to his firing position alongside Nihlis. Rounds were spattering the top of the parapet in long, continuous bursts.
Need to get some fucking fire over here, fellas! They're getting close!
Tully shouted, his voice barely audible above the rounds lashing past his head. Bald and Porter crawled over to the north side, moving as quickly as they could without raising their heads above the parapet. Porter's combats were frayed at the knees from constantly scraping against the debris strewn across the roof. His elbows were bleeding. He had more nicks and cuts on his body than a Chinese torture victim. He stopped by the north wall next to Tully and immediately lay flat on the scorched concrete. More bullets tore into the rooftop in a deafening racket. One of the other Belgians had curled up in a fetal position in sheer terror at the storm of unrelenting gunfire. In the distance, Porter could hear the buzzing of the first helicopter as it neared their position, the mechanical whine of its engines getting louder. The pilot's voice came over the sat phone.
Ambassador 1, this is Hilo Z1. Ready to engage next targets?
We've got to deal with the rebels at the garage, Porter told himself, before they brass us all up.
He grabbed the binos from Bald, swapping them for the sat phone. Then Porter scrambled to his feet before his mucker could say anything, shifted over to the north wall and gazed out through the glasses at the Cape Road, trying to pinpoint the enemy. Round after hot round whipped past him. Porter tried to remain calm in spite of the terrifying rate of fire bearing down on him. A burst rattled the top of the parapet 6 inches to his right, scattering chunks of concrete across the rooftop. Porter knew he was taking a massive risk by exposing himself to enemy fire, but he also knew he didn't have a choice. The Black Hawks had missed the rebels camped out in the garage on the previous flyovers. Unless Porter could point out their coordinates, the rebels were going to keep on peppering the rooftop with accurate gunfire. He glimpsed one of the rebels firing from the window on the first floor of the garage. Then he turned to Bald.
25 X-rays north of us,
Porter shouted.
At the garage with the blue roof, 200 meters. Get some fire down on those cunts.
Bald got on the sat phone and relayed the int to the pilot. He had to shout to make himself heard above the bursts of gunfire and the howl of RPG rockets. Porter saw the Black Hawk banking sharply to the left, her rotors straining under the pressure of the turn. Then the M134 on the left-hand side buzzed. A river of fire spurted out of the minigun, blasting the garage. Porter couldn't see much of the strike area. There was a lot of dust and debris and occasional flashes of bright red light as tracer rounds sliced through the walls, pulverizing any targets camped out inside the building. Five or six rebels had managed to escape the garage before the minigun struck. Porter heard the pa-pap, pa-pap, pa-pap of the M134 on the right-hand side as it fired again. The fleeing rebels disappeared in a cloud of blood and smoke, like a killer magic trick. Further to the east, some of the enemy emerged from behind cover at the banana trees and tried to bring down the heli with their small arms fire. The Black Hawk blitzed them with a long squirt from the minigun, chopping up the plantation and everyone in it. By the time the heli flew back out to the bay, the entire road had been decimated. Porter stepped back from the parapet. Bald stared at him with a look of grudging respect.
"Fuck me, mate. Maybe I was wrong."
"What do you mean?"
Bald grinned.
"Maybe you've got a pair of balls on you after all."
"Fuck off, Jock." They went back to work, racing from one side of the roof to the other as the Black Hawks took turns to make sweeps of the hotel. The operators worked like a married couple, Porter sighting the next target through the binos, determining the distance and number of enemies, Bald transmitting the int back to the pilots on board each heli. After 5 or 6 minutes, Porter looked past his shoulder and noticed that the flames on the car tire had almost burnt themselves out. He dispatched Tully and Nealis down to the car park to fetch more wheels before the fire extinguished. Then he ordered the other three Belgians to spread out across the north, east and south sides of the rooftop, watching in case any more rebels attempted to advance on the hotel. But he figured it was unlikely the enemy would try to attack again, not with the Black Hawks on the prowl. The few remaining rebels were now camped out behind the old police station. They were taking pot shots at the rooftop, accompanied by the occasional RPG rocket or mortar round. Porter got a visual on the enemy's location. Bald called it in. The heli swept inland, the minigun chainsawed. The bullets shredded the police station. After 8 sweeps, the rebel guns began to quieten. Hardly any rounds were coming in at the rooftop now. One rebel stepped into the Cape Road and pointed his RPG skywards as the second Black Hawk swung back in from the bay. Big mistake. The M134 chopped him up into pieces so small they were practically molecular. A few pockets of rebels stood their ground, but most of the survivors were driven back under the huge rate of gunfire raining down on them in clinical bursts. Fires had broken out across the Cape Road and towards the roundabout in the east as the Black Hawks laid waste to the technicals and outlying buildings, obliterating anywhere the enemy tried to hide. The sky blackened. The palm trees swayed under the hot blast of the heli's blades. Dust swirled over the mutilated corpses strewn across the tarmac. Everywhere Porter looked, he could see smoking piles of rubble and limbs. After 12 sweeps, the guns stopped firing. The dust settled. Porter gazed out across the Cape Road. The enemy was in full retreat. 20 or so rebels had managed to escape the killing spree. They had ditched their weapons and were scrabbling back past the roundabout, running away from the helis as fast as their skinny legs could carry them. Overhead, the two Black Hawks sequenced into a holding pattern, circling the hotel rooftop, searching for any more opportune targets in the surrounding buildings. But none of the enemy showed their faces or returned fire.
"They've given up the fight," Porter realized. "It's over."
He slumped back against a ruined section of the wall, looked down at his watch, 13:42. They had been directing the top cover for more than half an hour. It felt more like 3 hours. It had been the longest 30 minutes of his life. His head was mashed, his clothes glued to his skin, his forearm muscles burning. He reached over and grabbed a half-full bottle of water. The plastic was hot to the touch. The water tasted warm when he pressed it to his lips. Porter didn't care. He took a long gulp, wiped his dry lips with the back of his hand, and closed his eyes for a beat. Bald got off the sat phone with Hendricks. Porter chucked him the water bottle. He took a deep swig, blinked sweat out of his eyes.
Fucking hell. That was close. If them hellies had been a minute or two later, we'd have been toast.
Porter nodded at his mucker.
You all right?
Nothing a pint of bells won't sort out.
He shook his head and laughed at the madness of it all.
That was fucking wacky, mate. When they briefed us on the op, I wasn't expecting us to end up in a remake of Zulu.
Me neither, said Porter. I thought we were done for back there.
Good job you were handy with that jimpy, or we'd have been in serious shit.
Bald nodded grudgingly.
You're not such a bad operator yourself, even if you are a southern cunt.
Scottish wanker.
Says the puff who can't handle a drink.
Porter managed a weak smile as the Black Hawks circled above. Neither of them said another word. They didn't need to. Both of them had stared death in the eye up there on the rooftop. There was a special bond that existed between operators who had faced certain death and survived to tell the tale. It put everything else into perspective. All the petty bullshit of the world, all the pointless crap that people stressed over, none of it mattered.
Maybe I was wrong, Porter reflected. Bald isn't such a bad guy after all. We might have our differences, but he had my back today on the rooftop. When the shit hit the fan, he stepped up. You can't ask for more than that in a bloke.
Bald had a mean streak and a savage tongue, but underneath it all, he was loyal. And that was all that mattered, really. He said,
When we get back to London, we'll owe that Angela bird a pint.
Just the one? For saving our bacon?
Bald pulled a look of horror and then shook his head.
And everyone says us jocks are tight bastards.
They lapsed into a casual, friendly silence for several moments. Then Tully called out from the south side of the rooftop. Porter and Bald picked themselves up, moved stiffly across the roof. They kept their heads low in case any of the rebels had managed to avoid the pummeling dished out by the Blackhawks. Unlikely, but neither of them wanted to take a chance. They passed the noxious fumes rising up from the burning car tyres and the damaged water tower. Smoke hung like a veil over the rooftop. The smoke cleared. Porter saw Tully kneeling at the air conditioning duct beside one of the Belgians. The guy was all kinds of fucked up. His stomach was slashed open and his guts were hanging out of the wide gash like the inner tube spilling out of a slashed car tyre. His face and hands were pockmarked with bits of shrapnel. A puddle of glistening blood had formed around his entrails. The guy's breathing was shallow and his eyes were dancing wildly in their sockets. Porter dropped beside the Belgian to examine his injuries. Bald cocked his head at Tully.
What happened?
Poor cunt must have been hit by one of them RPGs.
Tully pointed to a huge hole in a lower section of the southern wall. Chunks of concrete were scattered all over the place.
Right when one of the helis was making a pass over us.
Porter tore a strip off the guy's shirt, then covered it over the wound as a temporary dressing. The Belgian moaned in pain, muttering a few incoherent words under his breath. Porter had done enough basic medical training in the regiment to know his chances of survival were grim unless they medevaced him to a hospital immediately. He finished applying the dressing, then looked up at Bald.
What did Hendricks say about the evacuation? Rescue choppers on their way now, sea stallions.
How long till they get here?
Hendricks reckons 20 minutes,
Bald said.
They're going to land at the helipad west of the hotel with a detachment of Marines, then start ferrying everyone out to the aircraft carrier. Yanks and Brits first, then Europeans, then everyone else.
Porter nodded. He thought 1,000 civilians, plus the staff. The Sea Stallions had a maximum capacity of 55 passengers, which meant they would have to make 20 trips in order to get everyone out of the country. He gestured to the wounded Belgian.
We'll have to take him with us on the first chopper out of here. He's a priority case.
He looked to Tully.
Get us some water. We need to stop his vitals from drying out.
Tully headed off in search of a discarded water bottle. Porter stood up and noticed Bald frowning at something over at the southern wall. He looked in the same direction. Saw nothing. Turned back to his mucker.
What is it?
Nihilus.
and the other Belgians, Bald replied. They're not here.
Porter glanced around the rooftop again, scratching the back of his head.
Bald's right.
He couldn't see the other three Belgians, just the guy with half his face missing to the north and the guy with his guts hanging out to the south. Porter did a quick recce of the area, noting that the Belgians had taken their SLRs with them, as if they'd simply upped sticks and left as soon as the battle was over.
Where the fuck did they go? Porter wondered aloud. They must have pissed off downstairs, Bald suggested. Maybe they're helping to put out some of those fires that were breaking out.
Porter shook his head.
We don't have time to worry about them. Let's get Soames. We've got to put him on that first heli. Fine by me, mate. I don't know about you, but I've had enough of this shite country to last me a lifetime.
What about this fella?
Tully asked, pointing to the Belgian with his guts hanging out. The guy was conscious but totally out of it.
Watch over him until the helis get here, Porter ordered. Keep pouring water over his vitals. We'll put him on the first chopper with us.
Porter crossed the rooftop with Bald and ducked into the cool shade of the stairwell, leaving Tully behind to watch over the rag order Belgian. The blasting noise and fury of the Black Hawks circling overhead faded to a dull hum as the two blades made their way down the stairs. The adrenaline of the firefight had started to wear off. Porter willed on his tired muscles.
Just a little further. We're almost there now. Keep going.
They descended the stairs at a brisk pace. The landings were brimming with smoke from where the RPG rockets had scored direct hits. Dense curtains of it choked the upper floor landings. Some of the guests were poking their heads out of the rooms, but the vast majority were still hiding inside, praying to gods they didn't believe in, waiting for someone to knock on the door and tell them everything was okay, that they could go back to their nice, cozy lives. Porter ran into Tannen and Crowder on the way down. They were busy coordinating the small army of volunteers, dispatching them to various floors with fire extinguishers and first aid kits and blankets for anyone suffering trauma. News of the rebels' defeat had quickly spread among the staff and volunteers. Tannen looked visibly relieved, but Crowder appeared dejected. Porter didn't blame the guy.
We might have knocked back the rebels, he thought, but this guy's business has been trashed.
It would take months before the hotel could open its doors again, if ever. Porter rapidly outlined the evacuation plan to them both and told Crowder to make sure everyone stayed inside their rooms until the Marines were ready to begin transferring people to the choppers. Then he ran on downstairs with Bald. The smoke thinned out at the second floor landing. Porter hit the bottom stair and almost tripped over a couple of Nigerian soldiers. They were slouched across the landing, their knees pulled tight to their chests. They stared up at the two passing operators with their dull, bovine expressions. Porter breezed past them and pushed down the corridor at a fast pace, Bald hard on his heels. He saw the storeroom door 10 meters up ahead, hurried towards it. Then he froze. The door wasn't locked. Porter stepped closer. A splintered crack ran down the middle of the door, and the lock had been busted open. Porter paused in front of the storeroom door and listened carefully. He heard no sound coming from inside. He pushed the door open. It groaned back on its hinges, revealing the dark interior. He saw the light bulb flickering overhead, the dusty shelves at the far end, desk to the right, the sink to his left. Then the realization hit him, like a knife twisting inside his guts. Soames wasn't there. The room was empty.